Thank you. We're joined this week by Maureen Moakley, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at the University of Rhode Island, Dan McGowan from the Boston Globe, and our guest is Rhode Island Secretary of State Nellie Gorbea. Thank you all for joining us. Secretary Gorbea, let's start with your recent announcement that you are in the hunt to become Rhode Island's next governor in the 2022 election. Your announcement came early in the season. Why do you consider yourself a better choice for governor than Dan McKee?
Well, of all of the governor or any of the other candidates that have been floated in the various articles, I believe that I'm the only one in the group of candidates that has actually transformed an agency of government. And I'm running to be Rhode Island's next governor because I want to continue making government work for people, bringing diverse voices to the table and connecting people to opportunities that help them thrive.
To change gears, I'm going to ask you a question about how there are a lot of debates playing out across many states now about voting rights. Republicans tend to say this is about preventing fraud. Democrats say this is about restricting minority voting rights. Is there a better way of addressing this than just the partisan control of individual states?
Well, I actually think that Rhode Island can serve as a model for other states. We manage to work across party lines. We have an election system that really is a model for many others. And really, elections are team sports. You have to work together. And I'm proud of the progress that we've made during my time as Secretary of State to make sure that Rhode Islanders are proud and can participate in elections that are safe and secure.
Let's go to Dan.
Secretary, as if being the governor is not hard enough, you're going to, if you were elected, you would be taking over the Providence school system along with it. And I'm curious, you know, we're seeing a lot of pushback between the teachers unions and Education Commissioner Angelica Infante Green. Would you support keeping Education Commissioner Infante Green on board? I think her contract would come up sometime next year. So do you support keeping her as the state education commissioner?
You know, I think that the commissioner, as all of us in public service, are constantly being challenged to prove ourselves. And so I think it's premature to pass judgment. I mean, we just had a really terrible year because of the pandemic and education. It just posed a lot of different challenges. I hope that over the next several months, the commissioner is able to come to an agreement with the teachers union. That would actually make it a very compelling case for her to be renewed.
So I guess just to follow up on that very quickly, let's pretend hypothetically that they haven't made any progress by the time that you would potentially become the governor. Would that be reason enough to change a commissioner or a superintendent?
I think the entire state is looking at both the commissioner and the teachers union to absolutely come to terms with improvements in the Providence public schools. And both of them, both parties, will be judged by whatever progress or lack of progress they make.
Let's go to Maureen.
The Rhode Island Public Expenditure Council came out with an unusual move. They don't usually take policy positions, but they came out and argued that not only should we not enforce the moratorium on charter schools, but we should actually expand charter schools, especially in low-performing districts. Their argument is that we can't wait for, 5 or 6 years to have the public schools where they are. They had an interesting suggestion about creating a fund so we could compensate the local schools for the students that they lost. So in monetarily speaking, they'd be compensated, but we could move along in terms of charter schools. What's your opinion about that?
You know, charter schools are here to stay, and they're a part of the mix. And there's a variety of ways in which a child can learn. One would hope that, you know, that public schools are definitely able to do so. But some kids are, and some parents are going to want charter schools. Some parents are going to opt out of both systems. I think it's a worthwhile conversation point, but the key point here is to make sure that every child in Rhode Island is able to obtain a quality education. That should be our north, regardless of the system that they're placed in or that they choose to be in. And it's part of the reason I've supported having a constitutional right to an education here in Rhode Island.
I want to follow up. Do you support expanding charter schools in Providence and compensating the districts? Everybody's entitled to an education, but for some of these students, it'll be 5 or 6 years before they can get a quality education.
No, yeah, but I think that, well, we have to see what happens now with the contract and what happens in the next few years. You know, an expansion of charter schools doesn't automatically lead to kids being educated. I do think that the moratorium is unfortunate in that, you know, people have already made plans, and it is unfair to block something that's in process. But what it points to is the need for a lot more dialogue between the parties to come up with an education system that works for every single child in the state. And as I think that's one of the roles that as a governor we should take is to bring parties together and guide a path that works for the greatest number of people.
Secretary Gorbea, you're a former director of Housing Works Rhode Island, so you're no stranger to how Rhode Island faces a housing crisis. There's a lack of affordable housing and a lack of new housing construction. This is a hindrance for economic growth. If you were elected governor, what would your approach be to improving this situation?
You know, Rhode Island has a supply and demand issue with housing, which is what's really resulted in this persistent affordability problem. And we absolutely need to make sure that we work on this. You know, part of the problem has been, yes, local zoning restrictions, which and the balkanization of costs and permits and all that. And we need to figure out a statewide solution that helps unblock that. We need to go from 1,000 building permits to 5,000 building permits a year so that we can provide housing for our families, our seniors, our young people across the economic spectrum. That is absolutely key to the development of a healthy local economy.
And after your experience on this issue, you don't have any more specific ideas on how to achieve that?
Exactly. No, it is exactly in working it with the cities and towns and providing resources from the state level to unblock some of the barriers at the local level. Now, each community has different issues. If you go to Charleston, they're going to raise certain issues that the people in Providence are going to raise different ones. And so you have to take a very, careful approach, but one that addresses the barriers to building housing in this state.
Let's go back to Maureen.
Secretary, as governor, would you support restructuring the tax system in the state? The progressives are talking for a restructured system. And if you were governor, how would you go about restructuring, and what kind of changes would you make?
So my first impulse for running for governor is to make sure that we restructure government and the services it provides currently. And I do think that you have to start there. You have to start with the taxes that you're reaping in this moment, and then making sure that there aren't efficiencies that you could take. My office has done a lot of different things by investing in our own state employees and producing better outcomes and better services for our customers. So I'm going to start there. Then once we have that, we can absolutely take a look at our tax structure. And that has to be, again, a community-wide conversation. It shouldn't be something that pits, you know, one group of people against the other. It should be done in a way that we can all come out of it believing that the system is fair and that, you know, both businesses and individuals know what to expect with regards to taxes.
But the thing is, you're going to have to make some tough choices. I mean, it isn't like everybody's going to come together and they're going to agree. You're going to have to take a perspective and, you know, answer the progressives that say people in the high end should be paying more. What about that?
And I would say, okay, what is it that you're wanting from government that's not being provided? And can you work with me first on making sure that we're not somehow leaving money on the table, right, as we reorganize government and modernize it? And then we can have a conversation around tax increases. I'm not going to shy away from having those conversations. I think if you see my record, it's around, you know, bringing very disparate opinion makers together in a room to craft a solution that doesn't make necessarily everybody happy, but works for everyone.
Let's go back to Dan.
Secretary, Governor McKee has almost created a ticket system with Lieutenant Governor Sabina Matos, even though we don't currently have one. So one, very straightforward, do you support the governor and the lieutenant governor running as a ticket? And then either way, do you feel any pressure in your run for governor to sort of have a lieutenant governor choice as well?
You know, other candidates can do whatever they want. Our current form of government is one where every candidate runs individually. I do think that there might be, it might be time to reexamine the role of a lieutenant governor within the executive branch, because it made sense back in the 1800s, right? When a governor was going to travel to Narragansett, you know, there would be decisions that would have to be made in Providence that there was no communication for with the governor. But, you know, or when the guys, and it was all guys at that time, right, died when they were 50. But this is not the case right now. And so, you know, we do spend a fair amount of money on the lieutenant governor's position, and it should be a position that should be much more meaningful in terms of its role if we are going to continue to have it, or we should rethink about how we structure our executive branch.
Would you support Sabina Matos for lieutenant governor?
If we're all part of the Democratic ticket after the primary, absolutely.
Secretary Gorbea, we know how political polarization in the United States is at a very high point. We saw that with the assault on the Capitol on January 6th. Gun sales are through the roof. Are you concerned that this is a recipe for more kind of civil violence in America? And if so, what is the remedy for that?
Education is key. I think we have to, you know, across the board, whether it be from, you know, kindergarten all the way through community conversations that adults are having, that we create spaces in which to have civil discourse. And I'm proud of the work that I've done here at the Department of State in promoting civic education, not by mandating it, but by providing resources to teachers, to civic organizations, so that people can learn what are the ways in which you can have your voices heard within, you know, the government, and provide spaces for people to have civil discourse conversations.
One final question for you. The pandemic showed the popularity and utility of early voting, but some skeptics still question the lack of a witness signature requirement for a mail ballot. Why is that not a concern for possible abuse of mail ballots?
Look, I think those people are misinformed. The security of the system was never those two witnesses or the notary of the voter's signature. The security of the system is in the information that's provided by the voter, including the voter's own signature. If anything, having a requirement that that voter be overseen by other individuals is, I think, much more open to problems with people interfering with that voter's choices. So I think that the system that we've developed over the year of the pandemic should be what should be continued in the years ahead. It worked very well on four very contested elections. It showed that it worked. And it's what Rhode Islanders, I know, are expecting going forward, which is why I support the Let Rhode Island Vote Act. And I'm hoping that the legislature will pass its measures.
That's all the time we have, so we need to leave it there. Thank you for joining us, Maureen.
Thank you.
From the Boston Globe, Dan McGowan.
Thanks for having me, Ian.
And Rhode Island Secretary of State Nellie Gorbea.
Thank you.
As usual, you can find a lot more on our website at thepublicsradio.org. I'm Ian Donis.